Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette CD tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. Over the past year, Tom Grandy, founder of this tape series, has had the opportunity to hear Mark Mattson present as the keynote speaker at two national trade conventions. In addition to developing a close personal relationship with Mark, Mr. Grandy has also read his book, Freedom from Fear, not once, but several times. The book is full of interesting stories about a man named Len, with lots and lots of practical advice about life in general. Mr. Grandy found the book so interesting that he decided to share a few excerpts from the book, which is also available on cassette tape or CD, with the Business Tape audience this month. Mark Mattson is president of Pinnacle Service Group based out of Linwood, Washington. As a dynamic and inspirational keynote speaker and a highly effective facilitator, seminar leader, and writer, Mark speaks and consults nationally on a wide variety of subjects, inspiring audiences around the country to higher levels of personal and professional performance. To understand this tape, you must understand the setting of the book. After a long and fruitful life, a man by the name of Len dies, and you, the listener, are at his funeral. There are hundreds of people at the funeral that Len helped in practical ways. One by one, they share their testimony of their unique relationship with Len and how he impacted their lives. For the next 30 or 40 minutes, simply forget about business for a little while and shift your focus to life itself. I hope you find the few excerpts we have chosen from Mark's book both enjoyable and practical.
Chapter 3. Attitude alters altitude. Len's oldest son had an opportunity to speak at his father's funeral. He'd grown up to be a fine young man, successful, well-spoken, articulate. He began, "I learned a great many things from my father. I learned how to love from my father. Evidently, my dad had a compassionate heart since he was a kid. My grandfather told me about a time when Dad was 5 years old. In the old neighborhood on the poor side of town, back in the 40s, an elderly couple lived next door. They had been married for over 50 years when the fellow's wife was lost to cancer. The day after the funeral, the old widower was sitting on the porch swing that he and his wife used to sit in around dinner time. My dad, while having dinner with the family, saw him sitting there alone. He got up halfway through the meal without saying a word and went out the door. Now, this was not normal behavior for my dad. You see, dinner was his favorite meal, and he loved to eat. Grandma got up, looked out the window to see what he was up to. She saw him climb up into the old man's lap. About 20 minutes later, Dad gave him a hug and came back into the house, not saying a word, and resumed eating his cold dinner. Finally, Grandpa couldn't stand it anymore and asked him what in the world they talked about. Dad thought for a minute and said in that young voice, "Oh, we didn't talk. I just helped him cry." As I held back my own tears, I looked around the church. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. That was the first and only time I'd ever heard Dad talking about the people he'd helped. He never talked about it, the work he did for others. His service work, not to me, not to my brother, or to my mom. And when we'd ask, he'd say, "Oh, I'll tell you someday." You see, my father was a very private man. And yet, this overwhelming turnout today clearly shows that he'd helped a lot of people. You can't know how much it means to our family to have you all here to celebrate my dad's life. Thanks so much for coming. And thanks for helping me cry. I couldn't help but feel a little jealous knowing his son would get to read his father's journals. I knew there were dozens and dozens of them. Len was unique. Imagine, dozens of journals in Len's own hand. I smiled when I considered all the thoughts, lessons, insights, and wisdom. I remember one particular day. I was frustrated by my apparent snail's pace of growth, specifically regarding optimism and seeing things the way Len seemed to. Have you ever considered your impact on others, Steve? Len asked me softly one day. No, I haven't, I said meekly. That's obvious, he said to me sternly, but with a smile. You see, optimism is learned behavior. It's an attitude. It has a number of components. The way I see it, it's kind of like a set of binoculars. When good things happen, to me, I look at them through the magnified end. The good in life becomes larger and more enjoyable. And when the bad things happen, I take responsibility for them, but I look at those through the minimizing or small end of the binoculars, thereby learning without dwelling on them or making them bigger than they need to be. Which way do you turn your binoculars when positive things happen? I would hazard a guess you develop the habit of seeing them with the opposite end, the small end. Here are some things to remember. 7 things. You might even want to write these down. This is the good stuff. Here's what optimists do. 1. Optimism requires constant fanning. You got to work at it all the time. Stay with it. Decide to and stick with it. 2. Optimists capture their wins in writing. If anything good happens, they write it down. Anything at all. 3. Optimists believe that good events stem from permanent conditions and are the direct results of their efforts and attitudes. 4. Optimists believe bad events stem from temporary conditions and external causes. They find temporary and specific causes for misfortune, yet take full responsibility. You see, that's the art of hope. 5. Optimists like themselves. They have a healthy sense of self. They may even say things like, you know, I'm the kind of guy I might like to spend the rest of my life with. It's really self-respect. 6. Optimists catch themselves and others in the act of doing things right. They praise. And you know what? Praise pays. And 7. Optimists believe they can change, that they have the ability to, and they want to. And they can rewrite any aspect of their life scripts. I remember that meeting like it was yesterday. Later on, after the funeral, I spoke to his son, Daniel. I asked him a simple question, what he'd missed the most. He thought for a minute and he said, you know, hearing him say, son, I'm proud of you. I'm glad you're my son. You see, growing up, he said that to me almost every day. In fact, I can't remember a day he didn't say it. I also liked his responses to the question, how you doing today? As you probably know, he had kind of an unusual or humorous response, Daniel said, grinning. Do you remember? Yes, I said. He'd say things like fabulous, or sensational, or incredible, or stupendous. Daniel said, yeah, I had some favorites. A notch above awesome. I'm on this side of the grass, so I'm grateful. If I was doing any better, I'd be twins. And of course, fluctuating between fabulous and sensational. And you know, I didn't say this to everybody else, but he used to do something that really meant a lot to me. At night, he used to ask us 2 questions. What was the most fun you had today? Of all the things you did today, what are you the most proud of? And then after I'd go on about the highlights of my day, whatever it was, recess or lunch or sports, I'd feel safe and secure and I'd feel good inside. And then he'd always follow that up with, what are you looking forward to tomorrow? And then he just listened, you know? I always felt like he really cared and understood. Just 2 questions, really simple. What was the most fun you had? What are you looking forward to tomorrow? But now that I'm an adult and I do that with my kids, I realize that it was really about memory, you know, reflection, and imagination. And those are 2 things that, you know, are powerful things to teach your kids. I also remember him saying, people need 3 things, son. If you remember this, you'll always get along with everyone. 1, people need appreciation. 2, respect. And 3, understanding. How I remember it is A-R-U. Are you? Are you doing that for other people? Are you giving that to others? Appreciation, respect, understanding. Dad liked acronyms. It's how he remembered a lot of things that were important to him. You love them a lot, I said. Yes, Daniel said with a sad look on his face. I'm really going to miss him. Me too. I'm going to miss his smile, that toothy grin for no apparent reason. He used to say, smile and the feelings will follow. If you smile long enough, you'll come up with a good reason. Did he ever have you make a gratitude list? I asked Daniel. All the time. That used to really annoy me. Give me 5 things you're grateful for on paper. But you know, now I understand. Heck, I have my kids do it. It's just a simple way to shift my focus from what's wrong to what's right. He was something, wasn't he? Different, I mused. I've never known anyone quite like him, Daniel said softly, with a hint of sadness in his voice. He was really a student. He was constantly taking notes. I remember asking him one day, what is it about you, Dad? Why? Why do you have this attitude? And he said, you know, son, every person I meet is my superior in some way. I later found out that was a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. But he said, if you remember that everyone's my teacher. Now, some are giving you warnings and some are giving you examples, but everyone teaches. Thanks for spending some extra time with me, Daniel. You're a lot like your dad. Your children are lucky. He smiled as he shook my hand. Thank you. Glenn's lessons. Every man I meet is my superior in some way. Consider this. How can I develop an attitude of gratitude in all things? The answer? List 5 things you're grateful for on paper. Today. Smile and the feelings will follow. If you smile long enough, you'll come up with a reason. Finding temporary and specific causes for misfortune is the art of hope. Finding permanent and universal causes of misfortune is the practice of despair. Which one do you practice? And finally, the last of the human freedoms is to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. Viktor Frankl. Chapter 6, Labor of Love. The next speaker was very tall and displayed a great deal of quiet confidence as he stepped to the podium. The day I met Len changed my life forever. Frank spoke with a voice and a commanding presence. He was a lean, handsome man, impeccably dressed. I was a 32-year-old heating and air conditioning technician. I was a likable enough fellow, if you were to ask my boss. He would have said I was a pretty good hand with a wrench, and there was something missing from my life, though. As I sat and listened to this fellow, I thought to myself, this guy was never a blue-collar worker. He's so eloquent and articulate and composed. I met Len one hot summer day in August. I had already done at least 6 calls that day. It must have been at least 5 or 5:30 in the afternoon when I pulled up to Len's building. He was the owner. We had never done work on his building before, and the repair was a simple one, and I was done in just a few minutes. While I was writing up the work order, Len started to ask me some questions. He was genuinely interested in his building's environmental system and what had gone wrong, so he could avoid the same problems in the future. It was a refreshing experience to deal with someone like him. Once we were done with business, he said, as good as you are at your job, I sense that you're not happy in your work. There's an underlying sadness in you. Do you want to talk about it? How did he know? Was it that obvious? Well, I said, I've worked with my hands for 10 years. I started when I was just 16 years old. But recently I've been saying to myself, I'm not sure I want to do this too much more. I just can't quit. I have a mortgage and a wife and a baby boy, and I don't want to walk away from 10 years' experience in the industry. Well, you seem like a bright young man that just needs some direction, Len responded. If I were to introduce you to someone who could help you clarify some things, would you pay him a visit? Sure. You bet I would, I replied. The next day I went to the company's office, the gentleman he referred me to. This fellow's name was Carl. Carl seemed to be kind of a spiritual man, approachable, kind, honest, but there was something about him, an air. I told him how frustrated I was, not with the industry, but with my role in it, and what would he do if he were in my shoes. And smiling, he said, "Well, first of all, I'm honored that you asked me. I can only tell you what I would do and have done that's worked for me. I'll help you on two simple conditions. Number one, that you never tell anyone that I helped you. And number two, at some point in the future, you help someone else just for the sake of service, not with any expectation of receiving any kind of reward or recognition. Fair enough?" he said with a strange smile. "Fair enough," I said hesitantly. Frank paused for a moment in his story. In that brief moment, I reflected back. Carl, that was Len's mentor, wasn't it? Yes, he was Len's mentor. This fella in the story. His first real great teacher and coach. I remember Len talking about this guy with great reverence. Frank continued his story. "When I was 40, Carl said, I decided to build a larger house for my growing family. I sat down with a contractor and an architect and we drew up plans. We started with a completed project and began to work backwards. If I were you, that's what I would do. You must have some kind of plan, a blueprint." I grabbed a pen and notepad, and I captured the questions he shared with me. He continued with his barrage as my pen captured every word. "Perhaps the best way I can help you is some questions that will assist you in clarifying the direction and identifying your strengths, your areas of experience, where you've got an unidentified passion, maybe. But first, you must answer some very fundamental questions. What do you love to do? And I don't want you to answer these questions now. I'd like you to just write the questions down and think about them. Fair enough?" "Fair enough," I said. "What comes easily for you that's hard for others? What would you do for no money? In other words, if all the jobs paid a dollar, which one would you want? Which one would you do? And finally, if you only had 6 months to live, how would you spend your time? Would it be doing what you're doing now or something else?" "My head was spinning," said Frank. "I've never given any real thought to these kinds of questions." "And once you answer these questions on paper, come back and see me. Fair enough?" "Fair enough," I replied. It was something in the way that he said, "what you love to do." He emphasized the word love with such passion, such enthusiasm and certainty, I knew he was doing what he loved. You could see it in his eyes. As I was leaving, he said to me, "Frank, if you love what you do, and you do what you love, you'll never work another day in your life. And remember this, if you do what you love, the money will follow." Advice coming from someone as successful as Carl really meant something to me. Over the course of the next 6 weeks, I answered dozens of questions and had several meetings with Carl. And for the first time in my life, I got in touch with my inner self. Carl suggested that I soar with my strengths, and he advised me to get bigger than my job by showing up early and staying late and studying everything I could get my hands on. "Study the business of business," he said. "Learn how your company makes money and then find ways for you to help the company make more of it." One day, he shocked me by saying, "I'd like to introduce you to an old friend of mine. He used to work for me about 5 or 6 years ago. He was my top salesman. His name is Jim. He left to start his own company, and he needs a good salesman. Are you interested in having lunch with him?" I couldn't believe my ears. Here was Carl, introducing me to his direct and biggest competitor for a job as a salesman. Didn't he know that if I accepted a job with Jim, that I would probably be taking business away from him? I was a little confused. Then, as though he could read my mind, he said, "You probably think it's strange I would introduce you to my competitor. You see, Frank, there's always room in any large city for another good contractor. Jim's a fine man. He's got a great company. And you could learn a lot from him. I don't have a position for you right now, unfortunately. I wish I did. But you're ready to make that transition now. And he needs someone with your potential. But I want you to remember our bargain. Fair enough?" "Yes," I said with a smile. "Fair enough." I spent the next 5 years in Jim's employ, five of the most exciting and rewarding years of my life. I learned later that Carl had cancer the time that he first helped me, That, I thought naively, was why he'd help me. No, said Jim. He would have done the same thing if he were healthy. You see, Frank, when someone has the desire to get bigger than their job, and they go to work where they are, a big person will always help them. Carl was a big person. He understood the laws of compensation. He used to call it the unfailing boomerang. He lived in the long term. Relationships and people are what were important to him. Did you know he was worth over $500 million? He owned several businesses and helped hundreds, no, thousands of people in his lifetime. And the curious part was, he never really cared about the money. Oh, I suppose early in his career he might have, but people were always his first priority. He taught Len much of what he knows. You probably figured that out. He did the same for me. Do you know the play Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw? No, I said, a little embarrassed. Well, perhaps you remember the musical comedy My Fair Lady. Oh, sure, I said. I've seen that on TV. Wasn't that about the flower girl who's turned into a lady by a teacher and a colonel? Yes, that's the one. Carl was Colonel Pickering. He always saw me and treated me like the person I'd become, even when I couldn't see it. You see, he was a great man. He taught me a great deal before he pushed me out of the nest. I'll never forget what he said before I left his employment and started this company. Frank, find a need and fill it, first or better. And remember, Frank, you can have anything you want in life, anything at all, if you just assist enough other people in getting what they want first. You're a part of a great fraternity. It's an awesome trust, carrying the torch of silence and responsibility. But once you grab a hold of it, and you never let go. In exchange for what you receive, opportunity, gifts, skills, influence, personal greatness, and joy, you could have never imagined previously. Welcome to the club. As Frank stepped down, I began to think about Len. Len had a mentor. So that was it. Len's lessons. Labor of love. Do what you love and the money will follow. If you love what you do, you'll never work another day in your life. Soar with your strengths and never look back. Find out what you're good at. What comes easy to you? Does anyone else make a living doing it? If yes, go ask them what they would do differently if they were starting over now. Then go to work right now, where you are, getting bigger than your job, until you can do it full time. Did you know that you can have anything you want if you only assist enough other people in getting what they want first? Chapter 8. Time Takes Time. Time takes time. I was thinking about that when the next speaker said to the gathering in the church, "What do you want written on your tombstone?" It was exactly what I needed to hear to shake up my thinking. Her name was Margaret. She had flown in from Guam, of all places, to speak at Len's funeral. She was a nurse, a very famous nurse. She proceeded to tell her story. One day, Len said to me, "Let's go get some coffee at that Starbucks and talk." That little phrase was the beginning of a life change. "Time takes time. Start slow," he said. "You didn't get this way overnight. It's going to take some time to change for good. Take it easy. Remember, measurable progress in reasonable time." He continued, "Let me see your list of goals. Maybe that's the best way I can help you right now." "I don't have them," I said, embarrassed. "Are they in your car?" asked Len. "No." "Or maybe there's your house. We can swing by there." "No, I don't have them anywhere. I don't have any goals written down. Never have," I said meekly. "Oh, I see," he said softly. "Well, then that's where we'll start. Take this pen and paper and let's get started. Imagine you're in a very large church. As you walk in, you suddenly get a strange feeling, like a cold chill or a deja vu. You look around and notice something odd. You know almost everyone here. You walk to the front of the church to pay your respects to the deceased, and you look down on the casket, and lo and behold, it's you lying there. You comment to the person next to you how odd that is, and you realize they can't hear you. feeling like you're in the middle of a Twilight Zone episode. You sit down in back and listen to four speakers: your spouse of many years, your best friend, your business partner or boss, and a good friend that you worked with in the community, perhaps at your church or coaching. What will they say about you? I'll let you think about that for the next 30 minutes or so while I go get some more coffee. And whatever you think about, write it down. Whatever comes to mind, just put it on paper. Fair enough? There's no wrong way to do this exercise. Yes, I understand, I replied, as Len got up to get some more coffee and chat with the barista. I began this strange exercise. When I was done, Len said, "What'd you learn?" "Well, I'm not sure I did this right. Was I supposed to write about negative stuff?" Or then I realized, no, that's not right. No one says anything negative at a funeral about someone they cared about. So what I ended up writing was what I would want them to say about me. So how did I do? Len said, "You did just fine. There is no right or wrong way to do this. It's just designed to help you appreciate how little time you have, and to ultimately identify the gap between where you are and where you'd like to be before you die. You had several significant distinctions. Great job. Now, let's run the next leg of the race. I want you to make out a dream list, a lifetime goal list. What would you like to have, do, see, become, and share? I'd like you to invest another 30 minutes or so and write down as many things as you can think of. Try for at least 10 in each category. When you're done, we'll go over the 50 things you've written down. Fair enough?" he asked warmly. "Fair enough," I said. This particular exercise was really hard at first. I started slowly. It was hard to think in these terms. I had too many lids on my container. However, about 15 or 20 minutes into it, it really lit my fire. Now my pen was just smoking. I couldn't stop it. It was flying across the paper, and I didn't want to stop. I felt like a little kid at Christmas. Len could see I was visibly excited, pen moving furiously. He smiled. "Congratulations," he said. "You've just come up with at least 50 things to live for. This list will add 15 or 20 years to your life. You have many things to look forward to, but one word of caution: make sure you review your list every year and cross off the goals you've accomplished. This will make you feel great. And more importantly, when you cross one off, add one to the bottom of the list. No matter how outlandish that sounds." He opened up his journal and read a few of his to me. "Golf at St. Andrews in Scotland. Dive the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. Walk the Great Wall of China with my family. Ride down the Nile at sunset with my boys. Explore Machu Picchu in Peru." And under share, he wrote, "Write 3 best-selling children's books to help kids feel better about themselves, and then donate the proceeds to a literacy fund. Help build a community center for kids that teaches reading and writing skills, self-reliance, and life skills." As Len shared some of his lifetime goals, it was apparent that his thinking was much, much bigger than mine. He was a possibility thinker. He had big dreams. I also noticed he checked off about half of his goals. Wow, I thought. I was really onto something here. This was amazing. Len said to me, "When you commit your dreams to paper, something magical happens. It's the power of the quantified objective. When you write it down, you begin to move toward the goal, and it begins to move toward you. Asking begins the receiving process. We usually get whatever we ask for. Most of us have not learned to ask intelligently or without limits. Congratulations. You're in the elite 5% of the population that has a lifetime goal list. You're on your way. Now, I want you to remember a few things that might help. In fact, why don't you write them down? Remember, time takes time. Do first things first. Do one thing at a time. And finish what you start. Make the time to plan every single day, even on the weekends. We only have so much time." My pen was writing like crazy. "Are you a morning person or an evening person?" Len inquired. "Morning," I replied firmly. "Definitely mornings." "Okay," Len said softly. "Tomorrow morning, try this next little discipline, and then do it for 30 days without fail. After you review your goals, ask yourself, what can I do today to move toward my number one goal? As you plan your workday, weave an activity into your day that will move you one step closer to that big goal. This next bit of advice is really vital. One goal at a time. I'm going to say that again so you get it. One goal at a time. I put mine under 3x5 cards, and it sits on the dashboard of my car next to the speedometer. That way I see it 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 times a day. When I'm stuck in traffic, I read it out loud with enthusiasm. I'm amazed at the ideas that bubble to the surface when I drive. That seems to be my thinking time, so I keep my journal handy and I pull over a lot. Give it a try. What have you got to lose? I've been doing this now for over 30 years, one goal at a time. And finally, throughout the day, ask yourself, what's the best use of my time right now? I believe you'll have a lot of fun with these ideas. They work. Give it a try. I floated out of Starbucks that day, Margaret said proudly. I was filled with the possibilities of life and a newfound enthusiasm and faith. From that day to this, I've never stopped the process. I've been to 15 countries, accomplished almost all of my professional goals, and I'm living the life imagined. I never dreamed that 1 hour meeting in a coffee shop with a great teacher could so profoundly alter my life in such a meaningful and lasting way. I'll always be grateful for what Len did for me that day. And judging by the turnout, I wasn't the only person he helped. I think I need to sit down again and rewrite my funeral exercise. This is amazing. I'm sure going to miss him. Thanks so much for coming and honoring Len's life. As she stepped down from the podium, I made a few notes in my journal. Len's lessons. Time takes time. Do first things first. Do one thing at a time. Finish what you start. Periodically throughout the day, ask yourself, what's the best use of my time right now? Is what I'm doing right now moving me toward my objectives, or is it helping others? Make the time to plan every single day. If you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. It takes 15 minutes. Plan your work and work your plan. Just do it.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's tape. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. Better yet, check out Granding Associates on the World Wide Web. Our totally redesigned website now has a complete listing of all the products and services Granding Associates has to offer. Our address is www.grandyassociates.com, and it is also printed on the tape insert. Again, our website address is www.grandyassociates.com. One last comment. Granding Associates' Basic Business Bootcamp continues to impact contracting businesses across the country. Over the past 16 months, contractors from 28 different states have attended the program. Now for the good news. With the development costs covered, the price of the bootcamp has now been dropped from $2,500 to $1,425 in order to place the program within the grasp of every contractor in the country that is serious about profitable growth. If you're not generating the profit you deserve, I would suggest you seriously consider attending the 3-day bootcamp to learn all the basics of how to run a profitable business. To sign up for one of the monthly programs, simply give us a call at 1-800-432-7963. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandian Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.